Dad?
What, Hartley?
Well, you know how you give each hen house 10 acres of pasture space so the hens can do all their natural things?
Yeah, like enjoy sunshine, eat bugs and grass, and get exercise?
Well, if you give all the pasture space to the hens, there won't be any room for Rusty and me to play.
Hartley, the Wilcox farm is over 1,800 acres. We'll always have pasture for kids and hens to enjoy.
Cool. Catch you later. Rusty's waiting. Wilcox Family Farms. Locally fresh since 1909.
It's the Seattle Kitchen Show from the Hot Stove Society right here in downtown Seattle.
All right.
Our live audience is small but active. And I'm Tom Douglas. I'm owner of 15 restaurants here in downtown Seattle, all within a few blocks of each other. And I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to have you back from Maui, Chef.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here, except I would prefer to be there, but that's okay. I have, I have priorities.
That's right. So your son got hitched while you were over there.
My son is hitched, and my son is planning, and my daughter-in-law-to-be are planning the wedding for next year.
Oh, they're engaged.
They're engaged.
They're betrothed.
That's right.
Yes.
And, it's nice to dream about having a wedding in Maui, and it's got its moment, any wedding, and she's of Filipino and Japanese descendants, so 200 people wedding, it's still unfathomable to me.
200 people wedding. Oh my God! Is it true she's the former Miss Maui?
Miss Filipino Teen Maui, yes.
Oh, Miss Filipino Teen Maui. Okay. Okay, I just was asking. I've never met her, honestly. So, it's a big week around here for us. We are taping our show here at the Hot Stove Society, our cooking school that does classes every night. But tonight, KDO and I, who will be with us in a little bit, KDO and I are hosting Nigella Lawson at our Palace Ballroom. Remember Nigella?
Of course.
Yeah, she was such a hot thing. She was like the British Martha Stewart there for quite a long time. And I think she and her marriage or something ran into trouble, I guess. And now she's coming back. She's got her 11th book out. And I'm on stage with her tonight asking all the right questions.
Good for you.
About food, apparently. I'm not allowed to ask anything about anything else.
Yeah. But. Keep your hands in your pocket is what they say.
Well, I would never.
No, I know.
Okay. Thanks for sharing that. We're going to discuss our favorite taste of the week. I'm sure you've got something from the Hawaiian Islands for us. Cole Sisson of Doe Bay Wine Company is here to talk rosé. It is that time.
That's right.
I had a delicious bottle yesterday. We were doing an event at Amazon, and I had a delicious bottle of Barbera rosé that had a little bit of Moscato mixed into it. So it had that nice little fruitiness to it.
Wow.
It's delicious. Quite lovely. Brittany Bartleman is going to be here to talk coconut cream pie. You know, May 8th is the biggest day on the calendar for us here at the Dahlia Lounge.
And May
the Dahlia
day.
Bay, May 8th. Can you guess why?
It's
the National Coconut Cream Pie Day.
Oh, you have May a National 8th. Coconut Cream Pie. I didn't even know there was a National Coconut
Cream Pie. Of course there is. And so that's May 8th, and we have the pie-eating contest, and we have
Did Obama make that up when he came and try your pie?
He said my pie was pretty darn good.
That's right.
Yeah.
So is that how this happened? Or?
I still have the phone message. You know, this is in the era of phone messages.
Right. I forget there is no phone message.
Exactly. He left a message on my recorder saying, Tom, that pie, unbelievable, because he had eaten it in the back of his limousine.
So, right.
Yeah. There you go.
That's pretty cool.
And, of course, we're going to go toe-to-toe on the food trivia at the end of the show. You know, this show is 2 hours long. If you don't stay with us, you might not survive. You might starve to death. Don't you think?
You might not learn some trick of the trade that we provide.
Right. Okay. First, Sarah, are you going to be KDO for a while?
That I can do, Tom.
So I can do that.
I can do that.
What is that from? Do you remember?
I have no idea.
That I can do. I could do that. A chorus line.
Okay. Yeah. I'll take your word for it. So we're
going to know all the words to the show tunes.
Tom, you need to make references to something she can relate.
Yeah. Can you make it millennial specific only?
Let's see. It's from Hamilton.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, there we go.
Now you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So first, let's do some ordinary to extraordinary. You're going to take some ordinary dishes and make them extraordinary. And let's start today with brownies. Tom, what would you do to make a brownie just even more delicious than a brownie already is, which is pretty good, I gotta say.
Yeah, you like brownies?
Oh, yeah. I mean, most baked goods.
How do you make brownies?
I mean,
she gets
if
a box
I'm
of
lazy,
Krusty's brownie mix.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff is pretty good. I've had that stuff. It's not bad.
Yeah, I mean, I've had it also, but, you know, fresh brownies are pretty cool.
Okay, so what do you do to make fresh brownies?
Use good chocolate to start with, and then you'll have a much better brownie.
Are you melting your chocolate and then mixing it in? Or are you using cocoa powder?
I would use both. I would use good chocolate, finish it with good cocoa powder, some chocolate just powdered.
Why is that, Chef? Why is so many of those kind of recipes have, like, semi-sweet hard baker's chocolate, unsweetened baker's chocolate, and then cocoa powder at the same time?
Because
what's the difference there?
But you can use the cocoa powder to be a little bit of a thickener. It's not a thickener, but it's when it's actually melting into the chocolate and you mix it together, it holds you a little bit fluffier of a batter. So it's easier to make as a cookie.
Mm-hmm. And
but if... No, go ahead.
A lot of brownie recipes now add a bunch of other stuff on top. Do you like adding anything else? Do you like just a plain chocolate, really chocolatey brownie?
Well, I like to put it in the brownie. I like to put toasted hazelnut or walnut, you know, into my brownies. But I'm not a big fan. I mean, what are you going to do, whipped cream on top of your brownies? The answer is yes.
Ice cream?
The
yeah,
answer is
not?
Yes.
Yeah. I like vanilla. Personally, I love that vanilla / chocolate flavor combination that brownies generally have. And you have to undercook them. If you overcook a brownie, it's like eating sawdust. You might as well go chew on your workbench at home.
You need to have a little give and chewiness into your cookie for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right, moving on. Pesto chicken. What would you do to make a great pesto chicken?
Huh. Well, we're getting into the time. I know our basil is just starting to pop through, although it's been a little bit cold lately at the farm. Mm-hmm. Still down to 34 at night. Couple nights this last week. What would I do to make a great pesto chicken? Well, so many people buy boneless, skinless chicken breasts these days that it kind of makes me a bit despondent about the product in general. So I would buy a skin-on thigh portion, number one. Is that okay with you? Can you do that?
That is okay with me.
My daughter would freak out right now.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how to do that, but I can see it.
To buy a bone-in chicken thigh?
Yeah, I mean, I get that part, but then how would you prepare it as opposed to the boneless, skinless?
Yeah, so you saute it in a pan.
It's exactly the same process.
Okay.
Just a little bit longer. It takes longer to cook a leg because it's a thicker piece of meat. It's got a bone in it, so it takes longer to warm up and the heat to get in the middle. So
that's one way, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're doing yourself a favor by using the thigh versus using the breast, only because the flavor is actually a little bit stronger. It's a bit better of a meat to me. It's tighter and it also has more flavor. It's more interesting to eat.
So the other opportunity is a really simple little rotisserie chicken that you pull the meat off of. It tends to be a little more moist than something that's been seared and sautéed, boneless, skinless. And then you can save all the pickings for a soup, right? It makes a beautiful broth.
Oh, for even using the pesto, if you have leftover pesto and you have leftover chicken, use that in a sandwich. Just put the whole thing between two slices of toasted bread, and you're going to warm up the chicken in the oven. You're going to have a beautiful piece of sandwich.
Yeah. Put some on your sandwich, put some sun-dried tomatoes, your pesto, your
a nice
pink chicken.
Hard lettuce.
We're going to host a dinner party next using arugula in every course, Chef.
Oh, my, exciting.
And since Katie's not here, we're just going to have one of our audience members invite us over to cook for them.
Sure.
All right. Right here on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. And we're back in the Seattle kitchen. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rochereau.
And who in the audience would like to have us over for dinner? Anybody? You want to come up here for 1 second and just... we tricked you, didn't we?
This is what happened when you raise your hand.
Come on up here for 1 second. You know, Chef, this nice lady is having us over, not really kind of as friends, but she's going to make us a slave in her kitchen. Because she's throwing a dinner party but doesn't want to cook. She wants you to cook. She's going to put up with me, but she wants you to cook, really. So I'm just going to be there, and I'll do the dishes.
All right.
Yeah, I'll do the dishes.
Okay.
So what is your name?
Gwen.
Hi, Gwen. Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show.
Thank you.
So first question, Gwen, do you like arugula?
I love arugula.
Oh, good, because that's the theme of the dinner.
What do you love about arugula? Why you said that so wholeheartedly? What?
It's fresh. It's got that little bite to it.
Yeah, it's got a great nuttiness, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Nice vibrance.
It's also one of the first things out of the ground in the spring. Mm-hmm. It's delicious.
Yeah, actually, most of it in this area survived the winter. Yeah. No problem. So
do you know how this segment works?
I do not.
Typically, you throw a dinner party, but you have to have a guest of honor. And since we're hunkered down in the kitchen, you have to think in your mind who you'd love to have for dinner. Mm-hmm. The ultimate, well, maybe doesn't need to be ultimate. Somebody that we won't embarrass.
It doesn't have to be alive. It could be, you know.
Oh, how about Bruce Springsteen?
Whoa. Whoa. What are you doing later? You're my kind of girl. I just went to see Bruce on Broadway.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, I just went to see Bruce. That's... He had a little piece of arugula sticking out of his teeth.
He just came out of the dinner to go to concert.
Yeah. That's awesome. Okay, Bruce Springsteen's coming to dinner.
Wow.
Since he was born to run.
I think you should make him a nice bourbon drink for starter.
Really? I like that idea. He's a Jersey boy.
Yeah, nice bourbon with some, you know, just a leaf of arugula to garnish the bourbon would probably be very simply done, so you can eat a little bite of the arugula with the bourbon, getting the bite and the bitter from the arugula mixed with the bourbon. I mean, I don't know what else that would be really intelligent to do in terms of, unless you were pureeing the arugula, making it into an ice cube and putting it into your... But that wouldn't taste very good.
I think you make something like an arugula julep instead of mint julep. So, you use the arugula and you pound
idea,
it in
Tom.
The crushed ice and you put the bourbon in, a little simple syrup.
Fabulous idea.
You get that nutty...
See, you know your bar much better than I do. I'm more the wine guy, so...
But that, to me, sounds pretty darn good. And I bet Bruce, you know, he sings like 4 hours at a time, right? His throat must need a little soothing... That's arugula julep.
That sounds super cool to me.
All right. Bruce is, we got the Bruce and Patty. Is Patty his wife invited, or are we just going to...
No, she's invited.
Oh, really? That's too bad. I thought you and I were going to hang out with
you
Bruce.
You were really thinking about this for a minute. You were like, no, I don't think the wife needs to be there.
So now we have to have a little...
Yeah, I think we should introduce him to smoked salmon, you know, a nice... Actually, not smoked, but cured, you know, not just lightly cured overnight salmon. So it's... I think Bruce would be really appreciative of that, because I don't think they have much of that in the Midwest. And I think it's a pride that we have here, that we know how to treat it well. We know how to source it very well. So I think a nice piece of beautiful coho from the whole river this time of the year is so perfect that I think he would really be enchanted by that.
How are you curing it?
So I would cure it with salt, sugar, you know, 50-50 pretty much. Or actually, 60 salt, 40% sugar. And then use the arugula in terms of breaking it down into that brine. Put that over the salmon overnight with a little weight on it. And then you'd have all that flavor going straight into the salmon. And then the next day you rinse it off, dry it up, and then slice it very thin, and use that with an even more arugula. You could make a nice little arugula salad, little crumbled cheese, goat cheese with it, and you'd have marinated salmon with crumbled goat cheese and arugula. Very simple.
Mm.
And I think he would be enchanted by that.
Enchanted. Wow.
This is where he would be reminded.
What's your favorite Bruce song? Our next course is the entree. It has to have something to do with...
There are too many.
I know there's too many. There's Rosalita. Yeah. There's Thunder Road.
Yeah.
Riding on the back streets.
There is a lot.
To the river.
Just Born in America is a good one.
All right. I'm going to make a Jersey, North Jersey traditional dish, but with my own twist to it. So in North Jersey, they serve a lot of pasta. You know, it's that American-Italian thing going on there. Has really no relationship to Italy, but they think it does. So we just let them, kind of live in their own dreamland.
I remember when I was in Italy, and he's like, you've never been to Italy.
I'm going to make like an orchiette pasta, which is the little ear pasta, because Bruce is kind of half vegetarian. You know, he's always, he like does meatless.
Which half?
Meatless Mondays. It's really above the neck. Yeah. Anyway, so we're going to make a little arugula, spicy arugula pesto. So just like you make basil pesto, you know, for me, I like to use 75% basil, 25% flat leaf parsley,
mm-hmm.
garlic, pine nuts, and cheese, a Parmesan cheese, and then a fresh or delicious olive oil, right? So I'm going to add to that, you know, take the basil out, add the arugula, and I'm going to add Calabrian chilies. Have you tried these Calabrian chilies? They're canned.
Calabrian?
Calabrian from...
Oh, Calabria, yeah.
And so they're beautiful, spicy chilies. The oil that they're packed in is super delicious. They're what make our kale salad at Serious Pie so darn good. So I'm going to put these chilies into the arugula pesto, and we're going to make this spicy, spicy orchiette pasta, and then we're going to put big chunks of fennel sausage, kind of crispy chunks right on top. So we got beautiful green orchiette, fennel sausage, and Calabrian chilies, and that's going to pack a punch. And Rosalita
would love that.
Would love that. Down on the boardwalk.
Yeah. I'm with you. That's okay. Very Italian. Right. Very good.
So now you're stuck on dessert, chef.
So stuck on dessert with arugula. I think then the probably make like some kind of a blue cheese or Italian blue cheese, I guess, if you want to go there that way.
Gorgonzola.
A little mini tart. And I use some of your pesto because I was going to make a pesto for that. So put that into the...
You can't use my pesto.
I'm going to use my... Actually, I'm going to make mine better.
I use all the spicy pesto.
I'm
going to
use mine better.
Okay.
I'll just use pureed hazelnut and pureed arugula together.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put that on top of the gorgonzola and bake the whole thing together. So you end up with a warm gorgonzola tart for dessert with arugula and then a fresh salad of arugula on top.
Uh-huh.
And I think he's going to be arugula'd out when he leaves the house.
Yeah. He's definitely going to have arugula.
He's going to go, okay, so I learned everything about arugula. What do I do now?
I'm not going to let him leave.
Do you also have Clarence Clemens entombed in your living room? Or can we invite him and Nils Lofgren and Max Weinberg? And
as long as they play.
Yeah,
exactly. As long as they play.
I think Max Weinberg still plays on Conan O'Brien's show, if I'm not mistaken. Does he? Does anyone know that? You know, I catered Conan O'Brien's wedding.
Wow.
Yes.
I remember that at the train station.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Young lady named Liza, who lived right here in the Seattle area, they got hitched down at Union Station years ago. Well, thank you for sharing your love of Bruce.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hopefully, Bruce and Patty, like, he'll use a little mouthwash before he goes home because
that blue cheese.
We had a lot of garlic and a lot of blue cheese. That was Gwen, right?
Yes.
That was Gwen from our audience. Having dinner, a little dinner party with Bruce Springsteen and the dead members of the E Street Band. It's just like a little revisit, like a seance. It was a seance dinner.
Oh, wow.
Up next, we're going to drink a little rosé. It's that time of year. It's spring. Yay! Cole Sisson from Doe Bay Winery is here on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
We own several of Seattle's finest restaurants, including this cooking school here, the Hot Stove Society, which is where we tape our show. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our live audience for spending $15 to come have a few hours with us and to also get one of the delicious Dahlia Bakery breakfast sandwiches. I wanted to go in for 1 second and talk about Food Lifeline because that's what we do here. We're big supporters of Food Lifeline, and the hungry people of Seattle and Western Washington need your support year-round, not just at the holidays. So we just like to remind you that Aunt Betty committed to Food Lifeline, and at some point maybe you should, too, think about it, whether it's $5 a month or $500 a month, whatever that number is.
All like Aunt Betty, $1 million.
Yeah, but anyway, we appreciate that, and I know Food Lifeline does. It's a maintenance program. You got to think about it kind of like the Channel 9 public radio.
Just
kind
put
of
it on your bills to pay and just... Don't think about it anymore.
Like I said, $5 or $500 doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's being part of the village that takes care of our village. So
correct.
We would encourage that. Okay, we're going to talk about rosé because it's that time of year. We have Cole Sisson of Doe Bay Wine Company from Orcas Island in the East Sound. Love Orcas Island.
Thank you very much.
Welcome,
appreciate
Cole.
It. Thank you.
I've been just starting to pop some rosé on the lips. I had some Barbera Rosé yesterday. I did a big Amazon event, and it was a delicious beginning of spring rosé season for me. I like mine on the rocks. Does that freak you out as a winemaker?
Not at all. Not at all. I still have visions of arugula juleps dancing in my eyes at the moment. So on the rocks sounds great. Yeah. Crushed ice.
Crushed ice, exactly. So tell us about the winery. Tell us about how you got started and what you're bringing, what you have for us to taste here today.
Sure. So today we have Orcas Project, our Pinot Noir Rosé. Our project is something kind of similar. It's a collaboration. My wife and I moved back to Orcas, where I'm from originally. I was born and raised. I've spent the first 18 years of my life there. Just last May, she's actually from South Jersey, Philly area. So the whole tie-in here, I like where you're going.
Yeah.
So we moved back to Orcas, and we actually looked at planting vines on the island, and it's a really challenging climate, as you can imagine. And to the best of my knowledge, no commercial wines have ever actually been made on the island. So we're still in the process of looking at that in the future.
So I have a quick question, because I hear that then the islands is a challenge for grape growing.
Sure.
Now, I would think then Eastern Washington, with the high temperature and low temperature they have, would be harder on a vine than the maritime weather you have on the island. But is that the opposite of that?
It's so challenging to get the ripeness levels of grapes on the western side of the state here, especially when you get up further north in the Puget Sound area. Like Lopez Island and San Juan both have vineyards that they plant, but it's a really interesting kind of small segment of grapes that will actually ripen there. And German crossings, hybrids, things like that, Müller-Thurgau, Madelmangiavine.
So is there less sunshine on the island than there is here?
There's actually a little bit more sunshine on the island than
than Seattle. Yeah.
Right.
But less than Prosser.
But less than Prosser, yes.
Less than Prosser. So we looked at that, and it's interesting. So we actually ended up going, we looked at the old long shadows approach. We thought that was really, really interesting and really fun and would allow us to be able to kind of create our own wine label. So we actually spoke to a number of winemakers that we really respect around the Northwest, so around Oregon and Washington, and we went through and tasted and sampled, and we're kind of in the process now of trying to work all the way from the vineyards in other parts of these two states with decisions with, you know, trying to figure out the winemaking techniques, trying to figure out how to blend and all of that. So it's an interesting project in a strange place that's somewhat challenging logistically for a setting like this. But
yeah. So then you must be bringing your grapes in from somewhere else.
Yeah, so the grapes are actually, we're making them at the individual facilities right now.
Uh-huh.
So the grapes are from, respectively, the Willamette Valley, from Walla Walla, from Yakima Valley.
Mm-hmm.
We're still kind of trying to, this is only the second year we've done this. And so it's still kind of a new process for us, but it's fun because there's a lot of experimentation involved. We're doing kind of that idea where, you know, we'd like to make 50 cases of this or 100 cases of this, and it gives us a fun opportunity to mix and match and to really play around.
Mm-hmm. I would think, Jeff, I don't know, but to try and talk an Oregon winemaker into out of some Pinot Noir grapes, where they are getting top dollar for that right down there right now, to do rosé, which is traditionally a much less expensive project, right? How
sure.
do you make the finances work?
Well, a lot of it is there is a number, I mean, a lot of vineyards are coming online now that weren't online years back, and we're seeing a lot of, both in Washington and Oregon, a lot more varietals and a lot more opportunities to find grapes from top vineyards and top areas. So that's something that we're looking at. There's still younger vines a lot of times that don't go into the final cuvée for Pinot Noir. But rosé, the explosion of the popularity of rosé over the last 5 years, 10 years, 2 years has been...
Well, I think just the last 5 years has been crazy.
It's been crazy to watch. From your perspective as restaurateurs, like, it's incredible.
Yeah.
I've been pushing it on the radio for a long time now. I feel very responsible for the rosé explosion.
No doubt.
I've been singing it since I was in America. Yeah. I always thought it was, oh, rosé, can you see...
It isn't.
I always thought that's what they were talking about. I was like, man, I love this country. They drink like nobody's business.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us what to expect. Our audience here has a little bit of this rosé, so if you will just kind of talk through for people on the radio, talk through when you're tasting this rosé, what are you looking for?
Sure, you bet. So for us, and the first thing we're doing when we're looking at this rosé here is the color. It's a really kind of a light, very pretty. I'll keep my eyes on you. Okay, so very fresh, very beautiful color. On the nose, what I'm looking for, what my style kind of lies is I like a very fresh, very bright style of rosé, very dry as well. So on this, Pinot Noir makes a very kind of very subtle but very slightly floral and very pretty style.
Mm-hmm. Traditional Pinot Noir, I often get a little bit of a stinky nose, but this doesn't have that at all.
Yeah, this is a very interesting, it's very precise kind of austere style of winemaking, and you have more of that very fresh, like light strawberry.
This is almost like a food rosé you make there. Because of the acid balance being so nice and prominent?
It is very prominent, and that's one of the things that we look for, especially kind of in the industry, and pairing food and wine together, is you have to have that acidity.
Right.
You have to have that level that cuts through the richness of a dish,
right,
but also complements it. So for me, with any wine that we work with or serve at our shop, you know, the acid level is extraordinarily important.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of the expansion of people drinking rosé has allowed winemakers to make real rosé opposed to sweet rosé, which, you know, when it first started, some of the rosé were pretty disgusting in terms of the density of sugar was so high that you're like, that's not very good to drink. You know, it's like you get a headache. And but this is real wine.
This is what the direction that a lot of winemakers in the Northwest is making some incredible rosés now, but veering more towards that dry style that we're so familiar with when we drink European wines.
Right.
And so all of a sudden you have this tangent that's going that direction, and it makes for some really bright, fresh wines. It's a great gateway as well. Mm-hmm. It's nice. Really fun to watch.
I'm thinking warm goat cheese or something like this with this is delicious. I mean, it's like...
How very Provençal of you.
Yeah.
Listening to your dish with the salmon, the cured salmon and the arugula and the goat cheese...
Yeah.
You know, throw
that
a little bit
perfect.
Of this with it.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's only 12.4% alcohol. That's another aspect to this wine that, for me, is extremely important because you have this heightened acidity but the lower alcohol, and it becomes one of those. It's just fresh and bright. And with food, it's really incredible.
And that's one beauty about rosé, talking about the density of alcohol. It's the same thing. It's lower on alcohol, which allows you to be sipping on this on the porch, 5 p.m., you know, with some sun going down, and it's a nice little sipping wine. You don't get knocked by 7 o'clock. Wait till 9.
That's important.
There's so much going on Orcas. You know, it's quite the indigenous food scene up there. Tell us about the island itself and what's happening up there.
Sure.
Dove Bay Wine Company.
Yeah, it's a fascinating time to be home for me because I left when I was 18. I moved down to Seattle. And at that time, I was gone. I lived in Colorado and Nevada. But 18 years later, coming home and just seeing, I guess, a new perspective. My own eyes have opened. And it's interesting because so much is familiar. But there's so much excitement in that scene. Just restaurants. Young chefs who are doing dinners on their own at farms. The older guard of restaurant scene has really, it's maybe I have a new appreciation for it, but there's just a lot of excitement. You have people like, you know, Ship Bay and Rosario who have been there a long time, but then you have people like Hogstone and, you know, the Mesa pop-up series and things like that, that there's just a palpable level of excitement on the island with food, wine, distilleries, breweries. It's a really cool, interesting time to be up there, and now with the explosion of growth in Seattle, you have all of these people coming up who are curious, a whole new generation, a tier of individuals who, you know, have money to spend, would like to, and are interested in experiences. So it's fascinating for me as a professional, kind of leaving my career in the mid-30s and moving home, and it's very exciting. But yeah, I think you're going to see a lot more coming off the island here in the near future. And the neighboring islands, Lopez and, you know, Ursa Minor over there, San Juan, it's Willows, El Lummi. It's really, really fun.
Uh-huh. Of course, Jerry, you probably know John and Johnny, right, from the Rose Cafe?
Oh, yeah, the Rose Cafe, yeah, absolutely.
You know, what I love about that place is it is a little cafe, delicious little cafe, but they also have the little grocery. You can get anything you could want in downtown Seattle. Or even in markets in Manhattan, you can get at the Rose Cafe in their little grocery that they have attached to it. The best cheeses, hams.
It's incredible. John and Johnny, actually, I used to eat soup in their kitchen when I was 2-3 years old. And they have, they're the, you know, the godfather and godmother of the culture there. It's incredible to kind of see what they've done. But it's really, really delightful to have them there. And just an institution on the island.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, we've been talking with Cole Sisson of Dove Bay Wine Company up on Orcas Island. We've been tasting his new Orcas Island Project Rosé. It is quite delicious.
Thank you.
I'd love a case, please. Thank you very much.
You bet. On the way.
And up next, we're going to talk a little bit of food in the news, including a Barbaresco dinner and also talking about Pebble Mine on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
You're listening to Seattle Kitchens On Demand, brought to you this week by Bonide. Check out the Bonide family of products for all your gardening needs. Whether it's bugs or weeds, there's a Bonide product to help. Find out more about Bonide and a dealer near you at Bonide.com.
All right, welcome back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show at the Hot Stove Society.
Hey, I'm Terry Rotero, the chef in a hat.
I'm Tom Douglas. We own several of Seattle's fine restaurants. KDO is coming in a little bit later today. Oddly, work got in the way for her.
Well, that's a first.
She needs to get priorities. Exactly. We're going to talk food in the news, Chef.
All right.
A couple of things I wanted to talk about in my world.
Right.
Not super big news, but we had our Colander Cup last night. And if you don't know what that is.
Okay, say that again. You had the what?
The Colander, the Tommy D Colander Cup. And we have a big trophy with a bright blue colander on top.
Oh, I remember that.
And we invite different segments of our chef teams to come and compete against each other. So last night it was chef on chef. You know, oftentimes it's either a line cook or a sous chef, or sometimes it's a waiter and a cook combo. We always make a different rule for each Colander Cup. And so we had 15 teams last night competing against each other at the Serious Pie Westlake, back in the pastry kitchen, which is where our central pastry baking is.
Yeah.
It was super fun. We had Trident Seafoods had given us 15 sockeye salmon in the round, so they had to butcher their salmon. They had 30 minutes to make two plates for the judges to taste. We had five judges, and they also had a secret ingredient. The Asparagus Commission gave us tons of asparagus, and so we had that was the secret throw-in ingredient. And I got to say, it was really interesting, the difference between having the chefs of our restaurants compete compared to, say, the regular cooks compete that hadn't made it up to that chef level yet.
Right.
The competition was stiff last night.
The air was tense.
At about 11 o'clock last night, we all finished. And I got to announce the winner. The winning chef won $1,000. And second place was $500, and third place was $250. So, of all of our restaurants last night, the Dahlia Lounge came out on top.
They
wrestled the Colander Cup away from last year's winner of the Palace Kitchen. So it was really fun, and thanks to my team.
So what was the dish?
You know, I wasn't one of the judges. I was the MC.
Okay.
But it was a nose-to-tail salmon. So he did something with the head, with the collar, with the fillet.
Was he with you on Morimoto? Because that sounds like...
I know. I did something a little bit like that. But he plated it in that way.
Right.
Like the whole salmon cooked all the way down from head to tail. But
right.
Five different preparations in that. And I thought it was really interesting, very clean. And what he did the best that I like about young chefs is he stayed out of the way. You know, a minimum of manipulation and let the fish
maximum
shine.
Flavor.
Yeah, exactly.
That's beauty.
So that was super fun. Congratulations to the Dahlia Lounge on winning the Colander Cup 2018. Also, I just wanted to announce that we have a fun dinner that I'm going to be at on May 4th. It's Barbaresco dinner at Trattoria Cuoco, which is our place over in South Lake Union. Dinner's at 6:30. You can get tickets at tomdouglas.com. And I'm going to talk to the wines and the menu. As you know, I do have an affinity Nebbiolo grape, which is the base of Barbaresco and Barolo.
Uh-huh.
And Nebbiolo Langhe, so from the Langhe region in the Piemonte area there. And so I get excited about these. And we have lots of vintages of the Predatory Barbaresco, which in my mind is the best value in Barbaresco.
You've talked many times about this, and I believe you 100% because I've had it, and it's delicious.
It's delicious. It's just good drinking wine. It's kind of like my house wine in my home cellar. I have vintages all the way back to, I don't know, 40 years or something like that. So I'm excited about that. Chef Ron's going to do Wild Boar Salumi. We're going to do Frito Misto with Baña Calda, smoked beef crudo with cherries and pine nuts. Tagliarini with porcini's mushrooms and grana, duck porchetta with cocoa nibs, and then a little hazelnut torta, which is very common over there. Sometimes people over here don't get it because it's too dry. You have to drink it with, or eat it with an espresso or a cup of coffee or warm tea or something, because it is a traditional nut cake that is many people over here kind of prefer it as a breakfast cake.
Right. You know,
it makes sense with coffee, but I love it with a little whipped cream. Delicious.
I'm with you. Yeah. It's delicious.
So we've got all sorts of predatory wines from all the way back to 2005.
Wow.
Served at that dinner. Again, it's May 4th, 6:30 at tomdouglas.com. Promoting the Barbaresco dinner at Cuoco. C-U-O-C-O. Nobody can pronounce that word but me, I think.
Cuoco.
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 Means cook in Italian.
Yeah.
What does cuochi mean?
Chef.
Multiple cooks. That's the plural. So, chef.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if you've been following the news over in Maui, but the comment period for the Corps of Engineers on Pebble Mine is happening as we speak. And we had a big push in the last couple of weeks to extend the comment period from 30 days. There was going to be one comment period for 30 days on this massive,
where do
massive
I go
mine.
And sign the petition,
yeah.
Number one?
Go online and look up Pebble Mine comment period, Corps of Engineers, and the EPA, and send in your email. And what's really important on this for all of our listeners is that don't send in a group letter. Like, don't get 12 of your friends to sign it.
Individual.
Get 12 of your friends to individually send a letter, because the group letter gets counted as one, and an individual letter gets counted as one, right? So that's important. And what we're trying to get across is that if you don't give the locals or the fishermen here in Seattle or the restaurateurs like us, or if you don't let us work with this wild fish, if you don't manage correctly, blah, 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 then you're going to not have any jobs. You're not going to have an economy around this wild fish run. And in turn, the locals are going to choose something that's not very good for the fish, right? They're going to choose open pit copper and gold mining in the same area where these salmon rear their young.
Right.
And so it seems counterintuitive. Eat wild to save wild, but you have to create this economy, and it has to be well managed, which it is. It's been proven to be well managed right now. 56 million fish returned this year.
Yep.
Record. But you have to eat wild to save wild. And unless you can understand that, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, you put two and two together that without this economy of fishing, they're going to choose something else to feed their family.
And you can go on Hulu and watch a movie called The Bridge, or you can watch the new movie that you're part of, Mr. Douglas.
That's coming out in the end of July, called The Wild.
The Wild.
And also there's a Frontline episode all about Pebble Mine.
Right.
And interviewing the mine people and interviewing the locals. So I thought it was a very fair representation of what's at stake here.
So the basic line of this is Pebble Mine is they're trying to put a copper mine on top of a mountain that is right next to the most beautiful Bristol Bay.
Not right next to, in it.
Yeah, in it, Bristol Bay in Alaska, where the biggest and only left on this planet nest of spawning salmon is, the biggest nest of spawning salmon is. So that's a gist of the whole fight is no to the Pebble Mine because eventually it will leak into the bay and destroy.
Well, when you mine for copper and gold, you end up with these toxic tailing ponds is what they're called, and they're just like radioactive waste.
Right.
And they're suggesting that these ponds that they're building, these millions and millions of gallon ponds, will be safe
forever.
For the next 200,000 years. We all know that's just not the case, right? We all know
No human has been able to build anything like that yet. So.
Yeah. That's what they said about Fukushima, too. That can withstand any 9-0 or higher. Yeah, exactly. So that's a big deal. Get online, email the EPA, tell them that you'd like to stop Pebble Mine for Chef Terry and I. We would appreciate that. It's part of being good stewards.
I am extremely proud of our salmon. And it's something that I preach for the last 30 years I've been in Seattle. I go all over the world or all over the country for sure. And I always talk about how beautiful our salmon is and why we're so privileged to live in this part of the world. So,
all right, we didn't get the kale and fish sauce, but we'll get to that next time. Coming up, our Taste of the Week, both restaurants and at home on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. We're here at the Hot Stove Society, 2 hours every weekend. Actually, it's 4 hours, both Saturday and Sunday. So, Terry, this is traditionally when we talk about our favorite bites that we've had in the last week. And I know you've been in Maui, so what you got for me?
In Kie, there's a place that was I had never been before. It's called the Mill House. It's an old mill that's been transformed into a restaurant for the last, I think 5-6 years. Somebody took it over and whatever. I went there for dinner and I went there for lunch. I recommend if you go to Maui to make a stop over there. The food was absolutely delicious, fresh, beautiful. I was totally stunned.
Stunned?
I was stunned by I was not expecting this because it looks a little bit like Disney World when you get there. You know, they have actually a zip line in the back or whatever. And so I'm kind of like, this is going to be a nice treat here. Let's have some fries.
Is that how they bring the food from the kitchen, out by zip line?
Yeah, exactly. You want it fast? Here it is.
Yeah. Or maybe they just have like the zip line up in the avocado and papaya trees and
coconut palms. You just never see the person again.
I know.
Anyway, I recommend it.
What dish really stood out to you?
I had a mai mai that was made. It was just like absolutely stunning because it was fresh. It was absolutely beautiful piece of fish, simply grilled. And I had a little salad next to it of ikama like vegetable.
Uh-huh. Well, that could be taro.
Taro, thank you. I was looking for the name of the vegetable. Taro and papaya. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really stunning because it was simply done, fresh, beautiful citrus in it. Lily koi or passion fruit vinaigrette. It was absolutely stunning because like Tom said earlier in the show, it's nice to have beautiful things to cook with, especially if they're fresh and, you know, very local. But don't do too much to it. You know, often it gets overdone, and then you lose the quality of that standard and of that beautiful piece of fish or those vegetables. Mm. This was beautifully done, and I went back the next day for lunch. And same thing, it was absolutely delicious as well.
Boy, that's really hard to do, I think, especially for a professional chef,
yeah.
Is to get wowed two meals in a row.
Two meals in a row in the same restaurant, which does not, I mean, it's a very busy place.
Uh-huh.
But it's stunning. It's very, they did a beautiful job in restructuring the whole restaurant and making it very appealing to a lot of people. I don't know if everybody had the same experience, but I tried a lot of things on that menu. Probably, like you do, you know, 80% of the menu in two meals. And it was really cool. I was very, very happy to see them. They're doing such a beautiful job on such a big volume. Mm-hmm. You know, that was very cool.
My favorite taste, you know, it's asparagus season. And Connie Crawford, our neighbor in Prosser, we wait for her asparagus. My wife is diligent about waiting for the season. I'm not allowed to buy Mexican asparagus or California.
Oh, yeah.
She will not have it in the house. And so I just eat it at restaurants, other places.
And you go, oh, you guys don't have the real asparagus.
But we got a batch. We got what we call field-cut asparagus from Connie. So when asparagus goes through a sorting line, you'll end up getting the pencil size, or you'll get the standard mm-hmm. size, or the jumbo, what I call the fatties, you know, big steak-like asparagus spears. And last night I had a shaved asparagus, raw asparagus, so just with a peeler. So you take off the bottom skin, right? You just got to get to that tender point. And then it was peeled, but they took the tips, and they roasted the tips hard, just like you would a roasted vegetable,
sure.
Right? And I thought that was, we had the shaved salad with olive oil and shaved grana, or pecorino it was, nice salty pecorino, lemon juice, squeeze a lemon, and smoked sea salt. And then with these really crispy asparagus tips on top for a texture change, and for a different, really, asparagus flavor, raw asparagus compared to really cooked asparagus, very different flavors. I just thought it was a beautiful salad and an unusual way to take this vegetable that we kind of take for granted.
Right.
Just making steamed asparagus, or I love to pop it on the grill, right?
Yeah.
I just thought it was a fun alternative way to think about that as a vegetable and as a salad.
I think then raw asparagus is a very uncommon way to eat asparagus, mm-hmm. but it is this time of the year when they're young, tender, fresh. I mean, that's a beautiful way to eat it. It's a great, great vegetable. And I'm with you. Peel it a little bit and then eat the inside. It's gorgeous meat. I mean,
yeah.
It's beautiful. Thin is the other thing. Make sure you use a peeler so you can make very thin slices. But I'm with you. It's delicious. And creating two different textures on a salad is cool. Cool because when you eat it, you're not boring to eat the whole thing, the same thing over. But uh-huh. to have two different textures, one roasted, one raw, is delicious.
The other thing that I had recently was an asparagus panna cotta. So it was interesting because, in my mind, raw asparagus doesn't carry a whole lot of flavor,
right?
To carry a flan. But this was mixed with sorrel.
Mm.
So that beautiful, bright sourness
lemony.
Of sorrel, lemony,
yeah.
And buttermilk. Again, citrusy, lemony, and you just add a little gelatin. You add the pureed asparagus,
uh-huh.
or you can steep the asparagus in the buttermilk. If you add the puree, it gets a little stronger flavored. Then you just add your leaf gelatin and melt it in the warm buttermilk and asparagus puree, and then let it set in a little cup.
Mm.
And you put that right out, and maybe you garnish it with some poached shrimp or something of that nature. You have a beautiful springtime salad of asparagus. Again, it's just an opportunity to use it in a different way.
Right.
Maybe you put that flan right on top of a couple of pieces of grilled whole asparagus, right?
Yep.
So you're reinforcing the asparagus all the way through that plate. So, super fun.
When I see panna cotta on the menu, I'm usually in.
Why is that? I'm not.
Because I'm a big fan of light desserts. I'm not...
No, this is a salad.
No, I understand. But I'm saying if I see it, let's say, on the dessert, that's usually where I'm going to go. If I see it as an appetizer, I will go too. I'm a big fan of... I guess I was raised on a dairy farm or small farm with dairy. So I'm not afraid of milk. I'm not afraid of cream. I'm not afraid of those mm-hmm. items. And if a panna cotta is done well, the texture and the flavor that comes out of that, dairy is a very beautiful thing because it carries flavor really well. And that's one of the things. You know, if you put a pot of cream in the fridge and you don't cover it up, the next day it will smell like your fridge.
Right.
I mean, it catches up flavor really, really fast.
Yeah, just like butter does.
Just like butter, yeah. So it's the same principle when you make something with cream or milk. It picks up the flavor really well. So I'm a big fan.
Good. All right, we're going to do some picnicking when we come back. A little tips on making the perfect picnic right here on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show.
I'm Terry Rotero, the chef in a hat.
If you want to be part of our audience, all you have to do is go to hotstovesociety.com, pay your $15. You too can enjoy a brilliantly cooked Dahlia Bakery English muffin breakfast sandwich, hot coffee.
So delicious.
Fresh
tea. Look at that. Everybody's salivating just thinking about it.
I know. We're holding back until they... Terry, let's do some picnic tips. And I know you just had a big picnic in Hawaii.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough when I went to Maui to bring some halibut with me. I went to Mutual Fish and talked with Harry and brought a nice, beautiful piece of fresh halibut because I know my son was missing that. So brought that there. I baked it.
Let's just stop before we forget about Harry. He is the most handsome fishmonger in Seattle. Mutual Fish, I'd like to give him a little plug. Because
yes,
it's
absolutely.
Awesome place.
Beautiful. Yeah. And usually when I go to the island, you know, they're very big on when they come here to bring gift, like... They're very, very warming people. The Hawaiians in general are very welcoming. So I like to bring something, and I like to bring something from here. So I brought gorgeous piece of halibut, about 6-7 pound center cut, and then some smoked salmon. But back to the halibut. I went to the farmer's market in, where was I? In Makawa on Saturday. And then bought some rhubarb. They had gorgeous rhubarb from Hawaii. I was like, hey, I'll buy some rhubarb. Roast the rhubarb with some fresh honey and a little bit of heat, a little bit of a spice, and roast that super high, put that in the blender, made a wonderful puree, and not too sweet. It was the honey was there, but it was not too sweet. It's got a nice beat to it. And put that all over the halibut on top and baked the halibut at about 375 degrees. And the halibut came out as beautiful, flaky, and it had that bite of that rhubarb puree right on top of it. So it was really nice to have that, and I made just a quick roasted beet juice. I'm not going to bother you with the sauce because that's another story. But anyway, that left, we had obviously some leftover because we had a big hunk of halibut. The next day.
Roasted beet juice, really, Terry?
Roasted beet juice sauce.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, don't worry. I'll make it for you one day.
Yeah.
You'll love it. He hates beet. I love it. Anyway, the next day, that halibut that was in the fridge, that little piece of halibut that was left, was in the fridge, and we were going to the beach. So I made some. Carrots, ikama, and pomelo salad, and then I mixed the crumbled all the leftover of that rhubarb and halibut into the salad. Made a nice little aioli, mixed that together, and we brought some tacos with us, some nice tortillas, and man, that was absolutely beautiful picnic. Right on top of the crest, looking down at the bay. Mm-hmm. After that, we went snorkeling. Yeah, the snorkeling part was not part of the picnic. But we sat there, and man, that was delicious food.
I'm surprised that there was halibut left over. Usually when I cook, there's no halibut left over.
Yeah.
People just love it.
That's because I made
maybe
a lot.
Maybe it's the beet juice that you put on top of it.
It wasn't beet juice. It was a sauce made with roasted beet and juice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
I'll show you one day.
So some tips from the NewYorkTimes.com, some picnic tips of how to make your picnic more successful. One is pack your own seasoning kit when you're going out to do this. Let's say you're bringing steaks and Baker's. You're going down to Golden Gardens or something like that.
Right, right.
But bring an extra seasoning kit so you can adjust your seasonings on site.
Yes, because when you leave the house, it tastes one way. When you get to the beach, it tastes a very different way because it's been macerating. It's been losing its juices. It gets a little bit more watery. So it's nice to bring your own spice.
Another thing is be very specific with your guest on which...
Like beets?
No, not that so much, but where you're going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't know. I'm not a hiker. Like, to me, hiking is going to the Ritz-Carlton, like walking up the stairs to the Ritz-Carlton.
And going to the bar.
You know, they have those little, all these places. Like, Woodland Park must have a mile of different covers, you know.
Right.
So be very specific and set a pin drop, like on a Google map or something. That's what I need.
So what's that got to do with picnic? That has more to do with...
Okay, you have to get everyone there.
Yeah, of course.
Also, don't forget trash bags.
Yes.
That's something that you might forget. two reasons. One is if you don't have one and you have to pack everything out, it just really messes up your car.
And you should never expect to have a garbage can in the middle of nowhere.
That's true. And critters get in and put it all over the place. And then tape a thermometer inside your cooler. Now, this is one that you don't necessarily, like, if I'm leaving my house and going down to my community park down on the Salish Sea, you know, outside mm-hmm, of Blue Ridge there, mm-hmm. I don't worry about a thermometer.
Right.
But if you're packing in the morning and you're heading over, say, to Leavenworth or something up right. in the mountains, and you've got 4 or 5 hours before you're going to get to that food, it is nice to know where the temperature is so that you're not eating stuff that's been warm for right. a long time.
Especially if something that you have mistakenly done, for example, not closing the cooler or whatever, and you don't know, but things are actually getting warm, mm-hmm. it's very important that you know that. And don't be cheap with that kind of stuff. If you see the thermometer above 40, you know, in the 50s or whatever, just make sure you just, you know what, just go to the restaurant.
The closest or restaurant. If you're going to do that, if you find that and you think it's been that way for a while,
right.
cook it hard.
Yeah.
This isn't the time to eat
rare
food.
That's the other
food.
Way, yeah.
Yeah, because you can kill any pathogens by incinerating your food, which some people like to do anyway.
Yeah.
Then we went to Jamie Oliver's site after the New York Times. We picked up a few more things, and I think Katie O, when she was here, talked about this a little bit, and I think maybe you did too. I learned it from my friend Peggy Dow, taking an old mustard jar and making your mm-hmm. vinaigrette in that yeah. jar so that when you get to your picnic, you simply shake and pour over the salad.
That is
you
correct.
You really don't want to dress a lettuce salad at home.
Not
and
5 hours
eat
before,
it two
no.
hours later.
Yes, that is correct. You take an old Grey Poupon jar, you know, one of those, and when you have about half an inch left in there, drop in a little bit of acid, either a squeeze of a couple of lemon juice, shake really well, put olive oil, shake really well, and then you get dressing made. You know, it's like, it's really not that hard, and take that with you, and travels really well, and shake it again before you put on your lettuce, and you're done.
I think this one, maybe this is a British thing that they don't know to do this, but Jamie says crudités with hummus or something. Doesn't everyone do crudités at a picnic?
Yeah.
Isn't that typical?
Yeah.
So maybe Jamie's just a little behind the times there. Jamie also says a homemade slaw rather than a store-bought slaw.
He said
it's a million times better.
Absolutely.
Why absolutely? Right, if you go to the grocery store right now and you go to the lettuce section that used to have heads of lettuce, it is a wall of pre-made salads.
Correct.
Pre-made slaws.
A wall of it.
Pre-made everything. I mean,
exactly.
Literally is a wall.
If you pick the wrong one,
loaded.
You're
if you
a brick.
One, it pops out right in your face.
And if you pick the wrong wall...
don't you think it's interesting, the difference in our salad area?
Well, I think that now, today's, especially in places like Seattle or whatever, we do have recourse into, you know, you go to Whole Foods, you're going to get a huge, huge amount of different salads that are made. Yes. But it's...
I have no problem buying those. I don't know why.
I don't have a problem buying them either. But you ask a question: is it better to have your own? Yes, of course it's better.
Well,
first of all, you made it.
That's the question. It's like, why? Why do you care, chef?
Because I think it always tastes better if you make it, Tom.
Okay, right.
I've had your food many times. It always tastes better when you make it.
There you go. And if you're super organized, Jamie says you can try to bake some sort of sweet treat at the campsite.
Ooh.
I'm not sure.
Like marshmallow?
Well, you can do marshmallows, yeah, but he's saying naughty brownies or old school tarts. And, you know.
That is a lot of time at the campfire.
Some of those picnic grounds have those kind of charcoal grills that actually have a lid on it.
Right,
maybe you
right,
can figure
right.
it out in that scenario where you can bake some hot cookies.
That's a bit of an ask for being on. I think I would keep it to simply cast iron pan. On top of a fire and then saute some apple or some fruits of some kind.
Uh-huh.
A little caramel you could make because that's easy. You get the sugar in the pan. And then maybe a little, I don't know, maybe some cream on top of that. Whip some cream and put that on top of that. That would be delicious. But the tart idea is a little bit far-fetched for me.
All right.
I mean, this is camping.
Up next, Brittany Bartleben, pastry chef from the Dahlia Bakery, is going to come. And we're going to talk coconut cream pie
maybe
because... May 9th, or May 8th, is Coconut Cream Pie Day.
Woo.
On Caravan Radio, 97.3 FM. It's the Baker's Corner on the Seattle Kitchen Show. Chef Brittany Bartleben, pastry chef from the Dahlia Lounge and Dahlia Bakery, is here to join us because, as you politely said earlier, it's the best day of the year coming up.
Yeah.
What is that day?
That is Coconut Cream Pie Day, May 8th.
May 8th. Yes. And this is a national holiday, correct?
It is a national holiday. There are food holidays for everything.
Yeah.
But this is the one we can really get behind.
We can relate to.
Yes.
And I know in the past we've had all of our retail people and maybe even some of our bakers in coconut cream pie tiaras.
Full-on outfits, actually. Tutu and, we check our dignity at the door on Coconut Cream Pie Day. Yeah.
There was one year where we participated in the Gay Pride Parade, and everyone was coconut cream pie themed, and we made it into the Seattle Times.
Yes.
We were all so cute.
Yeah.
In our little
cute. I like that word.
Cute.
Yes, it was cute.
It was very cute.
Brittany, this pie has kind of taken over the world. We were talking earlier that it's raised over $2 million for charity. It's the basis of our Little Dahlia Bakery when we got started there. We have it in a bunch of different sizes. I always think about this pie back when I talked to Shelley about making it in the beginning as I wanted a homey dessert that my grandma would have made. This is what we came up with. We actually adapted a recipe from a book called The American Baker. Mm-hmm. I know Jim Dodge was the author, but we've taken it in different places since that. But that's kind of the base recipes that we used as our idea to begin with and made the adjustments. It has become this own little animal. How do you feel about that?
I actually love the pie.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's when you make it so often, it's easy to get sick of something, but it's just such a beautiful little pie. And it was created during a time when scratch baking wasn't as common, where if you were to get a diner pie somewhere, it would probably have a lot of gelatin in it and a lot of stabilizers. And what I love about this pie is you and Shelley said, no, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
We don't really care if the soft pastry cream's a little sloopy on the plate, and we're just going to use the best quality ingredients we can. And it's a beautiful, delicious pie.
Uh-huh. And I always say to people, you know, so many people tell me, oh, I don't like coconut. And I said, well, you should just try this pie, because so many people have become accustomed to what coconut flavor is.
Exactly.
Either through suntan lotion or
Malibu rum.
Yes.
A bad day.
Malibu rum.
Yeah.
Just horrible, right? Coco Lopez.
Yes, exactly. You know, and this pie is not that.
No.
It's got such different dimensions of the flavor of coconut, where you've got the toasty caramelized flavor of the angel flake coconut in the crust itself, which is hands down my favorite part of it. You've got real coconut milk and shredded coconut in the filling, and then you get that lovely unsweetened coconut on top of the pie, which really just brings the flavor home and cuts through the richness.
It's toasted too.
Toasted as well.
Real warm toasted
and
coconut.
And to your point, it tastes very nutty as opposed to chemical ideas of what coconut is.
Hawaiian tropic.
Great flavored soda tastes nothing like real grapes.
Exactly.
It's nice clean flavor. It's beautiful.
Exactly. I've been here for 7 years. My hands down favorite smell in the bakery is when the cocoa pie shells are being baked. It's the most beautiful aroma. Makes me hungry every time.
What do you use for your weights in the cocoa pie shells? Because sometimes that can ruin it for me when they've got beans or something
lentils.
Else. We use lentils?
We use lentils, and we get a lot of uses out of them, but you know when they're starting to get kind of flaky and stinky, it's time to buy a new bag.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about when you blind bake a shell and you put parchment in and you put some sort of weight in there.
Yes.
Why don't we just buy weights?
I don't know, Tom.
Okay.
See? That's the kind of stuff. Yeah, that's your job, Tom.
Yeah,
that's your job.
He's the big
your
picture
guy. Your job is to come around and go, we've used enough tons of lentils. We should put them into salads.
Idea.
Well, lentils, you know, Washington's a big lentil grower, so we're just supporting our local
agriculture.
Yes, exactly.
Very true.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We use rice from time to time. I like using rice because rice is very pliable. You know, when you want to really get into all those corners and your shell, your dough is really buttery, you want to make sure it doesn't slip. So rice is actually a very good...
Rice works great. It doesn't get quite as stinky when it's baking either. Lentils or beans are really common. After a few uses, it gets a little smelly.
So I think of our pie shell over the years that we've added a little bit more water, which is not typical for a pie shell.
Correct.
And I perceive the reason we did that was to stand up to that heavy pastry cream, right?
Yes, exactly.
Because it gets crispy.
It gets crispy, and restaurants are selling this by the slice. They need to be able to get through that crust and serve a clean slice of pie. In my opinion, it hasn't hurt the pie.
Yeah.
It's not,
like it better, honestly.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just a different style of crust.
Exactly. Yeah. It's when you're having a fruit pie or something like that, you want it really tender and flaky and buttery. For this one, it's more of it's almost like a short crust or a sugar crust, and I love it.
Another thing I find interesting is when people put the pie in their mouth and you look at their face. And I think it's different because a lot of times, let's say you're going to Denny's or you're going to one of the AM/PM market, you know, they have the cut pies and the little plastic clamshells or any of the grocery stores for that matter. If you look at the ingredient list, it's about a mile long for a, any of these pies, and there's nothing much natural in most of it.
Right.
Our pie is just cream, right? Just the
cream
best
and
cream.
Coconut milk.
Coconut milk.
Yeah.
I mean, just
sugar,
really. I think your body naturally reacts to that.
Yeah.
Cleanness.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's real good food, and we don't add any chemical garbage to make it hold a clean slice. Or.
All right. Is our pastry cream floured?
It's cornstarch.
Cornstarch.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of which way it was. So we do the coconut shred in the shell.
Correct.
We make the coconut milk custard.
With coconut in there.
And then we do the whipped cream with shredded toasted coconut on top.
Triple coconut, which actually quadruple coconut.
It's quadruple because of the milk and coconut.
Yes, exactly. When the pie was invented, it was not made with coconut milk. It was just whole milk.
And the small slice is always plenty.
Yeah.
Plenty.
Okay,
yes.
So what are some of the festivities going on around Coconut Cream Pie Day?
So we're going to have a selfie stand that starts from 9 a.m., goes until 2. You're going to be able to guess the weight of a coconut cream pie, and the winner gets a gift card. We're going to have a timed whipped cream piping skill contest.
Really?
You can do the best swirls in 34.1 seconds. And then the...
What's the 34? Where would that come from?
Is that the number to beat?
Yes.
Are you just being mean, or is that something to...
You'd have to ask Barb.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. And then the best of all is the coconut cream pie eating contest.
Is this where you put your face down?
Put your face down. Classic eating contest. Uh-huh. Where you
hand tied in your back?
Hand tied behind your back. It's timed, and you get down on that thing.
Oh.
Whoever...
If I recall correctly, you weigh each of the pies, and then you weigh them after the time is up.
So it goes by weight, how many ounces of pie you
just
put in your body.
Not whoever finishes it, because if you were trying to finish
nobody
one of those pies, you might die.
You might die.
You might actually die.
Is this a full 10-inch pie or 9-inch pie?
Oh, 6-inch pies. Yeah, we're not that cruel.
And what's the time they have?
I can't remember. I think it's 30 seconds.
Looks like
2 minutes.
Oh, 2 minutes, sorry.
We're getting 2 minutes from the back. I'm surprised nobody's ever finished it.
Well, Tom,
I think maybe you should join
the pie eating contest.
I think about half the way
I think we have a challenger.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds like he's talking smack.
Well,
right
like
now.
We said, you check dignity at the door for Coconut Cream Pie Day. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what you get in your beer.
Yeah, wear a shirt you don't care about.
Exactly, yeah.
When you make this pie, do you realize in the kitchen, or does your team realize how much this pie has raised for charity over the years?
We are all very aware of how amazing this pie has been, not only for charity, how it was for this company.
Uh-huh.
How it's, you know, the little pie that could. It's sort of, I mean, I spoke with Shelley a lot, who developed this recipe, and back in the day, it was your first cult following, really. And
yeah, the crab cakes were my first, honestly. Yeah. Crab cakes, I started that at Cafe Sport, but the coconut pie was a Dahlia thing.
Yeah.
And And so people would always ask, and they still do to this day. We get letters every day asking for a pie for an auction and for a dessert.
Yep.
For, what do they call that? Is dessert?
Dessert.
Dash.
Yeah. Or something like that. Yeah. And we can't do them all, but we certainly do as many
we
as we can.
We do a lot,
And it makes me feel
it
super good.
It feels fantastic.
Because you give a pie, and yes, they're $39, right?
Yes.
Probably the most expensive pie in Seattle is my guess. But at auction, they often go for $2,500 or $5,000.
Yes, absolutely.
And sometimes in an auction that I'm at sometimes, the people that buy it will redonate it back, so it'll sell three times for $2,500. Yeah. Because I don't know if they hate the pie or if they're just trying to impress.
get rid of it. This was a favorite dessert of Barack Obama's as well.
Yeah, exactly.
At least four or five pies that he got when he came through Seattle.
And you know what Paul Newman said after he had the pie? He had the pie at Etta's one day. And he told me, you should serve a revolver with that pie. His point being that once you've had that pie, you might as well be dead.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to get anything better.
No. So. Did you tell him it was already part of the game? If you eat the pie, you die.
You're going to die anyway? No, I did not tell
Shelley
him.
Shelly also told me you ate one slice per day. Every day.
Oh, my gosh,
coconut cream pie diet.
Is that true?
You don't look like this by skimping on pie.
This was in the early days. She said all he did was work and eat coke. All he did, or he ate coconut cream pie. That was his meal.
The royal taste tester.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, when you're first opening your own restaurant, you work a lot.
You
work
exactly.
And I feel like I work a lot now, but it's nothing like in the beginning. When
and you're running around. You're on your feet all
exactly.
day. A little sweet treat.
You need those calories.
It's delicious.
It's really good.
It's very good.
I like mine. You know, we do a shaved white chocolate on top. I like mine with a little extra shaved white chocolate on top. Yeah. Thank you, Brittany, for carrying on the pie tradition, the coconut cream pie
tradition.
Happy
to do it.
May 8th is Coconut Cream Pie Day. If you want to go down and be part of the pie contest or just watch, come on down right down here to 4th and Virginia, downtown Seattle. And what time does it start? 9 o'clock in the morning it starts.
Yeah. And if you want to pre-order your pie, you go to TomDouglas.com and go for it.
Pre-order a pie on Pie Day.
Breakfast pie.
All right. Up next, it's Food for Thought, Tasty Trivia on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Tasty Trivia. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rutter, the chef in a hat.
And I'm Katie O.
Look who showed up, Terry.
Yeah,
right in time. Right
just on time to give something away.
That's right. That's right. So this is time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge because I am your worthy component today.
Opponent.
Sarah Leibovitz, our production assistant, is going to be administering the quiz. As we normally do, we'll each get 5 questions. Whoever gets the most correct wins, and whoever gets the least amount correct, obviously, is the big fat loser and has to give something to one of our audience members. Sarah, who is that today?
Today, that is Gwen, who bravely came up and hosted Tom and Terry for dinner and Bruce Springsteen.
Tom, what are you going to give away today if you lose to Gwen?
I'm going to give Gwen a copy of every one of my books.
What?
So she had said that she wanted a copy of a book. That way, if she has some of them, she can just... Now she has some built-in presents.
Wow.
All that kind of thing. So
very nice.
So next time Seattle Kitchen, Big Dinners, Dahlia Bakery, and I Love Crab Cakes.
That's
and the good thing is, Tom, next time we go to Gwen's house, she's going to be cooking.
I know.
From the books.
There you go.
She loves the knowledge.
Terry, what will you give away?
Lunch for two at Lule.
Perfect. And because Brittany Bartolaven was just here talking about coconut cream pie, that delicious, delicious pie, how about the Dahlia Bakery cookbook signed by Brittany and Tom, plus a little $50 gift card to the bakery. So you can either make the pie or buy it.
And you can have a free entry into the pie eating contest on May 8th if you'd like. You too can put your face in the middle of a cream pie.
Bring some wet wipes.
That's right.
That's awesome.
Okay, here we go.
All right, who's going to be going first?
I'm
going to
start.
Okay, Terry, your first question. Twinkies have a shelf life of 7 years, 50 years, 25 days, or 4 months?
Well, I'm going to go with 50 years. That's like forever.
That is. It's a good guess. Unfortunately, they say it's 25 days.
Here's what I'll say about that. They're lying.
Yeah.
That was a lot of outrage.
I'm going to say I have read personally that Twinkie could be on the windowsill. Somebody had done that test for 2 years and never changed.
All right.
That is what they say.
All right. So, okay. I'll take that.
All right, Terry. How many animals have been portrayed as animal crackers? 15, 22, 37, or 86?
I'm going to go with 52.
52 wasn't actually one of the options, but yeah.
That's right. That's right. That's why I'm going to go with that.
Going for a wild card there. I'm afraid that is not actually the answer. It is 37. And they've been around since 1902. Okay, Terry, let's see if you can bring... You can still make a comeback, though. Instead of American-style birthday cake, Norwegians serve a kringle. It's a jelly donut, or Berliner, a Hostess cupcake with one candle imported from the U.S., a sweet potato kugel, or pudding, or a marzipan-filled Danish pastry.
Yes, marzipan.
You got that one right. There you go. Already turning it around.
Way to go, chef.
Thank God for my Swedish background.
All right, Terry. The Eskimo pie was originally called a seal flipper pie, a heaven on a stick, ice cream, or Haagen-Dazs.
I'm going to go with heaven on a stick, just because that sounds lovely.
It does sound lovely. Unfortunately, it was ice cream. All right, Terry, last question. Can still get 2 out of 5.
I'm glad we're talking about cooking here. Good.
Yes. Japanese eat this food for good luck on New Year's. udon noodle soup, red snapper, spam musubi, or sushi rice wrapped in a real gold leaf?
Yeah, that would be the one, the gold leaf.
Unfortunately, it's not. It's the red snapper, and that's because red is considered good luck. The color is considered good luck in Japan.
Okay, I go with that. That's one out of five.
That is one out of
five. High showing today.
All right, Katie, you ready for this?
Thank goodness for all the multiple choice.
Yes.
Let's do it.
Let's see how this goes. The classic wine cocktail called Kerr consists of white wine and Angostura bitters, Poire William, brandy, or creme de cassis.
Creme de cassis.
You are correct. It's named for Canon Felix Kerr, mayor of Dijon from 1945 to 1965. And it is Kerr Royal is made with champagne.
Delicious.
Kia. It's how it's pronounced.
All right. I got that all wrong.
That's okay. That's okay.
That's right. You're filling in for Tina. It's perfect.
Perfect. Yeah. All right, Katie. What is allégar? A seaweed product, the source of guar gum, vinegar made from beer, or Spanish rice?
I don't know the answer to this, so I'm just going to guess it's the guar gum.
Oh, no, it is vinegar. The vinegar made from beer.
Really?
And it's basically the same thing as malt vinegar.
Well,
okay.
Agar is from seaweed, and I thought you were going to fall for that one. Allégar, agar, agars.
Very similar sounding words, yes.
Which term means simmering? Bubbling, smiling, roiling, or like water for chocolate?
I'm going to say bubbling.
Roiling. It is actually smiling.
Smiling. Well, all right.
And just so you know, like water for chocolate is just below a simmer.
That's actually a water term. I only know apparently. It as the book and movie.
The movie, yeah.
Yeah.
Guess they had
water
to get
for
it
chocolate
somewhere.
Is like the little melting water.
Oh, like a double boiler, like that level? Mm. Interesting. Okay. All right.
So two more,
Katie.
Oh,
man. I thought I was off the hook. Okay.
A menu direction calls for tomato concasse. You should do what to the tomatoes? Seed, peel, finely dice and season. Mash into a coulis. Mash and blend with butter or sauté with olive oil and capers.
Oh, I bet Thierry wants to answer this. Do you both know this?
Yes. This is where you start
this
cooking.
This is where...
When you start cooking, you have to learn the word.
This is where, yeah.
This is the number one thing when you're becoming a cook to learn.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go with number one then, the peeling.
That's very good guess.
And it is correct. You're right.
You're welcome for
Thank
the
Thank you. $25 to the gift shop for Tom Douglas.
A pro chef asks you to season the dish. What do you do? Add salt and pepper to taste. Add smoky bacon. Stir while adding butter or sprinkle with essence.
Ooh, I like that last sprinkle with essence. I'm not sure what that is.
That'd be if Emerald asked.
Yeah, exactly. Bam. I'm going to go with number one, the salt and pepper method.
That is correct,
yes.
Katie. Great. That brings you to 3 out of 5. You are in the lead. All right, Tom, you just have to beat 1 out of 5. Let's see how it goes. All right.
Thanks for your confidence in me.
No, I am always so confident.
Let's see.
In all of you.
Let's just see.
Planking is a traditional cooking method for shad, jerky, corn, or turkey.
I'm going to go with turkey.
It is actually the fish. It is shad. All right, Tom. What is mirepoix? Do you need options?
Yes.
All right. A chiffonade of root vegetables, finely chopped onions, carrots, and celery, mere peas, in other words, nothing but peas, or the same as a bouquet garni.
Number two.
Yes.
That is correct. It's the base for many dishes. Its invention is credited to the personal cook of the French field marshal, the Du Levis Mirepoix.
Yep.
Wow, who knew?
Yeah.
Jerry knew.
Yeah.
I knew.
I
didn't get that question.
When you were an apprentice, did you get the when you were an apprentice, did you get the history lessons too, or did you get just
no.
do your job?
Yeah, just do your job.
Okay.
Was
all right.
The mouthfeel quality of wine known as grip is contributed by alcohol, sugar, acid, or tannins?
Tannins.
That is correct.
Yep.
So let's stick with the alcohol for a second. And this next question is, which fermented beverage has the highest level of alcohol? Beer, wine, sake, or cider?
Boy, that's probably less than 18 to 20%. So I'm going to go sake.
That is correct. What does it mean in Japan if you've seen chopsticks sticking vertically out of a rice bowl? I'm done? warning, bad rice, the diner is a rude Western barbarian, or it's a Buddhist offering for the dead.
Number three.
Good guess. It is the Buddhist offering for the dead.
Wait, no, number three is...
A rude Western barbarian.
Yeah, I'm going to go with both three and four on that.
Okay, because that is something you're just never supposed to do.
Yeah, right. Chopsticks sticking vertically from rice is taboo for any other reasons, just for the dead people.
Okay.
All right.
So you're dead already. Why do you have to stick your chopsticks?
So you're going to lunch at Lule, young lady.
Way to go to Gwen. If you want to be part of our show like Gwen, you can come here, or you can send us a note on Facebook or Twitter.